In the beginning, there was darkness, a void waiting to be filled with the echoes of destiny. From the depths of time, legends emerged. Heroes forged in the fires of adversity, their stories etched in the fabric of eternity. Through the sands of ancient deserts, across the vast expanse of galaxies, and amidst the tumultuous waves of the ocean, their journeys began. But amidst the chaos, there arose a whisper, a call to action, a beacon of hope. Now, as the world holds its breath, a new tale unfolds, a story of courage, of triumph against all odds. Join us as we delve into the depths of imagination, as we embark on a journey beyond the realms of possibility. For in every tale lies a lesson, in every legend, a truth waiting to be discovered. This is not just a podcast. This is an odyssey, a quest for knowledge, a quest for inspiration, a quest for the very essence of what it means to be human. Welcome, dear listeners, to a world of infinite possibilities. Welcome, dear listeners, to the True Life Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope that the world is singing. I hope that the birds are singing. I hope that the sun is shining and the wind is at your back. I have an incredible guest for everybody today. I want to just take a moment to talk to you about what's happening in the realm where business acumen meets empathetic leadership. There resides Rob Z. Wentz, a luminary figure weaving a tapestry of influence across diverse spheres. As an executive leadership coach, Rob doesn't just guide, he illuminates pathways to success, empowering driven business owners to navigate the complexities of entrepreneurship with his acclaimed Vitals system. But his impact transcends mere coaching. He's the visionary architect behind the Academy of Excellence, which we'll be talking about today, a sanctuary where servant leaders converge to amplify their income, impact, and influence. Here, relationships flourish, support abounds, and growth becomes a collective journey of personal and professional evolution. Rob, thank you so much for being here today. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing awesome, George. With an intro like that, how could I not be feeling good? That's good stuff. You even threw in some reverb, so I was loving it. That's good. Good stuff.
Yeah, there's something to be said about that. I've always admired, like, it just sounds like that you're at the stadium, like, Rob Z wins. I love it, man. It's so cool to have the ability to put that out there, I think.
I agree. I've often been very thrown off. Because I was in radio broadcasting for a long time, so I spoke at like football games or like some concerts. I'd be on stage like presenting something or just events where there was a lot of reverb, and it would mess with my head so bad. And I'd be like, how do people do this? Like, I can barely think straight. And I don't even know if I'm saying the right words right now out of my mouth because I can hear my voice back. It's a weird experience to have that happen.
Yeah, it is a weird experience. I remember back in the 80s when I first got my first tape recorder, which was like this big box, you know, and you put your cassette tape in there and you taped your voice and you played it back. And whoa, that's what I sound like. And I remember the very first time you get to hear your own voice, it's like, whoa, that's what I sound like. It sounds so different when you hear it from a third party perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things I have trained lots of people in podcasting, help them launch their podcast, and also getting used to making content because there's so much personal growth that comes along with it, let alone like, hey, I want to have this platform and do this and that and put my stuff out there to the world. But the personal growth that comes from hearing yourself and seeing yourself and the mannerisms and the facial expressions you make, people are horrified by it. Like, it ruins some people's lives because they're like, I didn't know I sounded like it. I didn't know I said that. I didn't know I made that face. And they're just like mortified, you know, and It's a great part of self-awareness, I think. There's nothing more nothing makes you more self-aware than seeing and hearing yourself for the first time and being like, oh no. And the thing I would always say is like, well, listen, you have friends and family who like you and you've been looking like this and sounding like this your whole life, and they're okay with you. So it must not be that big of a deal, and trying to like frame it in that way. You're the only one who has a problem with it because you're not used to it, you know?
It's really well said. It brings up this idea of awareness. And isn't it strange that maybe for the first time in our lives, we actually hear and see ourselves later in life? Like sometimes you don't actually hear or see yourself until you're an adult. Like that's kind of an interesting concept to think about, right?
Yeah. No, these days, not so much. Every kid knows what they sound like, yeah, what they look like from, you know, probably the time they're five on or whatever. But yeah, I think I always think about like, this is such a, the first person to invent the mirror had to been like, whoa, what the heck? And like whenever, before there were mirrors or anything like that, and somebody like saw the reflection in the water, that had to be terrifying or amazing or just like startling, you know, like, it's wild to think that some people never knew what they looked like. They never even saw a reflection of themselves. That's a crazy concept. So for us to like grow up and eventually hear ourselves, it's definitely illuminating and alarming. And what was something you noticed about yourself when you first heard yourself or saw how you talked? What was something that was like highlighted to you that you didn't know?
I think it's the idea that the actual sound of my voice and what I'm conveying is radically different than what I thought it was in my mind. You know, and it was almost like getting to observe yourself in the third person is an incredible gift because it changes the way in which you build ideas about relationships. You know, like on some level, I heard a quote once that said something along the lines of, perhaps the greatest superpower an individual could have would be to see themselves the way others see them. And I think that on some level, getting to see yourself or hear your voice is the beginning of that awareness. And it transforms relationships because you realize, oh my gosh, I sound like a total chump. I sound so arrogant or, you know, I'm very hard on ourselves. Yeah. But you do get the opportunity to judge yourself from a third person perspective. And that is invaluable. Like that can fundamentally have radical shifts in the way you communicate with yourself, your inner dialogue, and the people around you. What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's really true. When I'll do a podcast or something like that, or I spoke at like an online event a couple of weeks ago. And so I went and I was just driving in my car by myself one day. And I was like, I want to listen to my talk and see how it was. So I brought it up and I started listening to it. And I was very impressed with me. And I'm not usually very impressed with me. So what I noticed was like, while I was talking about this stuff on the episode, what hit me was, wow, when I was talking about this subject, I was in my head being like, I don't even think you're saying this correctly. I don't even, you might not even know what you're talking about. the inner dialogue was contradicting the words that were coming out of my mouth. And I remember listening back to myself and being like, oh, at this moment, I was doubting myself. But now that I'm hearing myself, I'm loving what I'm saying right here. And I was doing the right thing. So it kind of gave me an outside perspective confirmation of like, no, I am saying the right things. I am doing the right things. I need to stop listening to that stupid voice in my head that's always like overly critical of everything that I do. And so that gave me a really good perspective. And I think for some people, it's the opposite, where they watch or listen back to themselves. Yeah. And they hate everything that they said or something like that. And I know just from I spent 20 years in radio broadcasting. So we had to do air checks, right? And air checks was where a consultant would sit down and listen to you talk on the radio and then critique everything that you did. And it was terrible. And for a long time in radio, I put on a show, like I pretended that I was somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I never liked anything that I did when I was pretending that I was somebody else. But once I learned how to be me, I started to like everything that I did because I knew I was authentically being myself and I wasn't pretending or trying to be somebody else or a character that I thought I was supposed to be.
That's deep. You know, it reminds me of, I think that is a powerful lesson, not just for radio or podcasting, but for life. Like so often we go through life with these different masks on. And Thomas Hutchinson says, everyone hears a different you. And everyone you meet has built up their version of you. It makes me think of masks. Like we wear all these masks. Like I have George, the the truck driver, or George the father, or George this, but really there's just one George under all those masks. And if you can take that mask off, it takes a weight off your shoulders, literally, because you no longer have to carry the burden of other people's expectations. Like, you should be kind. You should be thankful. You should have gratitude. We should have that for yourself too, and know that you're enough. But I'm kind of hearing that when you talk about liking yourself by being yourself. Maybe you can expand on that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to when I don't care anymore, because I still care way too much. I'm so excited.
You're a good person, that's why.
But you often hear, my dad would said this, and other people say this, in your 50s, you really stop caring. And I'm so excited. I'm just like, I'm so eager to like get there, because it's exhausting to care. And if you know you're a good person, I know I'm a good person. I'm always working on myself, but I have good intentions. And I'm so excited to be like, and I could say, hey, I'm starting today. Today, I'm not going to care. But you know what, man? I still care. It's still like, that still creeps in there. But I'm so eager for that day of being when I, because I think this is how I'm picturing it. One day, I'm just going to realize, wow, I don't care what that person thinks. And I'm going to be like, oh, man, that feels good. And it's not like I don't have to actively tell myself not to care. I'm just not going to, because you're so settled in who you are. And I think that's where the personal development in that work comes from. If you are constantly working on you to be a better version of yourself, you get yourself to a point where I know I'm a solid person. I know that I have integrity. Like before we started this, right, we were talking about the time matrix. We were talking about being an upstanding individual, an upstanding person in society. And when you get to that place of like doing the things that you say you're going to do, your self-esteem gets so high that's where that comes into play, right? When I do the things that I say I'm going to do and I keep my word, that's when I feel the best. That's when I feel the most prepared. That's when I feel the most confident. That's when nobody can touch me. But when you kind of dance in this world of like, so I do some of the things that I want to do, but other things I fall short on. This what I'm saying right now could go in a million different directions and look different for a million different people. But for me, it's like, man, the closer I get to keeping my word to myself and to others, that is the most authentic version of myself. And there's no place for shame or guilt or self-hatred in that place.
Wow. That's well said. You know, maybe you could bring up that matrix that we were talking about earlier, because I think that speaks volumes of what we're talking about. The idea it's not that you don't care about, I mean, you still care about what other people think and they say, but it doesn't affect you in the same way. Like, obviously you still want to be a good person. You still want to help, but you realize what's really important to you and you're not willing to compromise those things. So what, you know, the negative intentions of other people, or sometimes the timelines of other people, or the tyranny of the immediate that's put onto us by society, that begins to have less of a weight on us. And I think that that's where you begin to really emerge. But maybe we could throw up that, maybe you could share screen and we could throw up that matrix and you can explain it a little bit. That would be epic.
Sure. This is from, did you ever read Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People?
Yeah. Yep.
This is from, I don't know if the concept came from him or he just used it in the book, but it is called the Time Matrix. And I'm going to put it on the screen as soon as I figure out where the button is. There it is.
There we go.
And so you guys can see it here. This is a very crude illustration of it, obviously. But the concept is, first things first, there's 4 quadrants of things we have in our life that need to get done. There's important things that are urgent to get done. There are important things that are not urgent to get done. There are not important things that are urgent get done, and there are not important things that are not urgent to get done. Now, quadrant 4, that's all of the crap that most of us waste. When you know you're wasting your time doom scrolling or playing too many video games, or there's a large category for this of the place where a lot of people spend a lot of their life. This is the world of just dying inside, in my personal opinion. And I've spent so many years, I dropped out of college at one point because I was so addicted to Halo 2. When Xbox Live came out, and I would put myself so deep, I was probably like 23, maybe 22 at that point, maybe, well, actually, maybe I was 21. Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. This is when I failed out of college. I was spending my whole day doing things that were not important and not urgent. Now, if you're a procrastinator, you spend a lot of your time here in the important and urgent category. So this is like things are important and urgent. So anything that needs done immediately that is important, I do this. But I procrastinate on this category, which is the most important category. They're not, these things are important, but these things are not urgent. So these are like the big dreams you have, right? The big projects you might have that you want to accomplish in your life. This might be where you need to get in shape, exercising every day. This might be every area of personal development that you slack on in your life. This area could be doing your taxes in January instead of getting an extension until October. You know what I mean? Like, that's this kind of area. But then there's the not important, urgent category. This is the kind of stuff, if you have a boss and you get lots of emails, this is that area, right? You're getting these emails for things that aren't necessarily important, but they're urgent and must be done immediately. If you work from home, this is the area of, oh man, I need to do this project, or I need to like have this deadline met, but I also need to get the dishes done. Oh, the grass needs cut. Oh, the things that come up repeatedly, they're not super important, but they're like urgent, needs to be done now. Or you make it seem like they need to be done now because you want to procrastinate on the things that are really important, but not urgent. So if we can move our life to the important and not urgent, we should spend 65 to 80% of our time in this quadrant. But most people only spend 15% of their time here. We should only spend about 15% of our time doing the not important but urgent things, but we end up spending most of our time, 50 to 60% of the time, doing this stuff. So the more stuff we can get done that's important but not urgent, the better our life is going to be. So for me, one of these things right now is I've been building a program for coaching, and I have one done for podcasting, but I'm refining the one for podcasting. Those are important for me to get done because they're programs that I can help market and build my coaching profession, but they're not urgent. I don't have to have them done right now, but the sooner I get them done, the better off I am. So we all have things in these categories in our life. And one of the best things I love, I've had this done for me, from my coach, and I do this for people that I coach. We go through an inventory of your life. We put things in these four categories, and then we find out, like, where are you spending your time, and how can we get this area where we spend most of our time? This is where we really get stuff done and we accomplish big things that will change our lives, change the lives of others, and, you know, potentially, if you think big enough, change the world. But that's the general concept around the time matrix. It's genius. It's so simple. And it really helps you to like put in perspective what you're doing with your life.
Yeah, it is fascinating to look at. And I think it allows us a different level of awareness. You know, when we think about time, often we are sort of held captive by a race from the hospital to the graveyard. And we never stop to slow down and there's a great gentleman by the name of Christian Fleck who has the Slowdown Club, and he talks about the way in which we experience time. And much like that particular graph right there, talks about doing what's important. And if you're not willing to slow down and take a look at your life and confront some of the difficult spots, there's a lot of people that are paid lots of money to keep you just chasing that carrot just all day long. And pretty soon you find that you've been running on a treadmill. In fact, that might be, you know, I heard a quote that said that some of the biggest symbols of our planet have been the bulldozer and the rocket ship. But I would argue that this last decade has probably been the treadmill, because people are just running in place and not going anywhere. You know what I mean? On some level, they could be on a flag somewhere, like the corporate world should have a treadmill and like their logo underneath. Like, you just run full speed, but don't go anywhere.
Super funny. You're getting, at least you're getting in shape while you're on the treadmill, I guess. But I find treadmills bizarre. There's a lady at my gym, and anytime I go there, she's always on the treadmill. It's like she doesn't leave. And I'm thinking, like, you could have walked so much outside and like seen so much. The treadmill just seems like a place of slow death to me. It's just like sad. I find treadmills sad. Ellipticals not so much, but a treadmill I find sad for some reason.
Well, it's like a human hamster wheel, right?
Yeah. Like you could go outside and you could run. You can see, but you're on this treadmill.
There's no destination. There's an illusion of a destination on a treadmill. But
and it's also assisting you in moving. So it's like you're not even really trying that hard.
Yeah. Yeah. On some level.
I know I'm totally off on that. People love treadmills and they're healthy, but it just seems like dumb to me. I don't know. It's comical.
Well, I think it speaks like I guess if you're trapped indoors and the weather sucks, treadmill works. But I don't think it's a good metaphor for people's lives. Like we spend a lot of time running in place and it's kind of sad. Like the same way you look at the treadmill and be like, that's sad. So too is it for an individual to spend all their life making just enough money for them to, you know, not fulfill any of their goals. And I think you can see that in life. I think you see, especially nowadays, when you see sort of this epidemic of a lack of meaning in people's lives. I think that's because everyone's running on a treadmill. We've kind of been conditioned that way. Is that too much to think, or what's your take on that?
No, man. It seems to be the case in a lot of situations, although I feel like for the past couple of years, things have been changing pretty dramatically and drastically, and a lot of people have been waking up to the concept of there has to be more meaning, and they're finding more meaning and finding more purpose. But the hard part is also if you spent 30, 40, 50, 60 years of your life on the hamster wheel and you jump off, then it's like, where do I start? Right. Yeah. Where do I begin? And that's one of the reasons. I mean, I encourage everybody to have a mentor, to be a mentor for somebody, have a coach, to be a coach for somebody, and make sure you get around people who just, they're not satisfied. Not that they're not like, they're peaceful and they're fun to be around, but they're always just creating more, wanting more, doing more out of a place of like, I know there's more, not out of a place of lack, but out of a place of like, wow, there's so much. I can always just keep growing, you know?
Yeah.
And it gets finding those people, and you can find those people anywhere. Trust me. If I live in a small town of about 40,000 people and I've found tons of those people here, you can find those people anywhere, but you have to change for you to find those people, because if you found them and you haven't changed yet, they can be right under your nose, but you're not going to resonate with them. They're not going to resonate with you.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I heard it reminds me of a great quote I heard not too long ago that says growth and comfort, they don't coexist together. And when you jump off the treadmill, for me, I was a UPS driver for 26 years, and I just got to a point where I couldn't be on the treadmill anymore. And I got off, and even now, like, you know, while I'm grateful, it was the best move of my life to leave there. I look back and it's still scary to see the changes that come, because when you leave something you've done for so long, in some ways you're leaving the identity of that person behind. Yeah. And it can be, sometimes growth looks a lot like death. You know what I mean? If you look at the way in which a caterpillar becomes a butterfly and it pops its wings out of the cocoon for the first time, or it begins to eat the detritus and find its new way out of there, you know, it looks like death on some level. And I've done a lot of time thinking about and talking to people and coaches and mentors and speaking to cool people like yourself. And what I have found is that if you do something for a long period of time, the inner dialogue that you think about yourself is conditioned. And not just by you, but it's reinforced by everybody you meet. For example, if I go out on the road, everybody I met saw me as this person. Well, what happens when you're not that person anymore? Now you don't have the reinforcement. You don't have the dialogue. And you're sort of in this fluid stage where you have to create a whole new story about who you are, about how people relate to you, about what you're capable of, about what your dreams are. And there's no more treadmill that's assisting you. Now it's just you. And it's both beautiful, but it can be scary too. What? Maybe you could speak to that idea of growth and comfort and creating new pathways for yourself.
Yeah, that's the whole wilderness journey, right? Going into the wilderness it's terrifying because it's the wilderness. I was talking to somebody else. I got lost in the woods when I was a kid, and it was freaking terrifying. Like it's scary to get lost in the woods.
Yeah.
You're just wandering around having no, and you can't see which way is the right way to go and everything looks the same. I guess getting lost in the ocean would be the same thing.
Yeah.
Although the woods is a bit less scary. The ocean, I think, would be way more scary. Anyway, but the point is that that wilderness phase of your life is, I mean, how else are you going to get to where you need to go?
Yeah.
If you know that you're not in the right place,
yeah,
and you know you have to do something to change, you can prepare yourself for the change. You can mentally, financially, physically prepare yourself for the change.
Right.
But there's still going to be that floating place of like, yes, what? And this was for me, man. I spent probably 3 years in the wilderness, and I feel like I'm in like the clearing now. I came out of the woods, and I'm like getting my feet set again. I'm like, oh, okay. So I went through, you know, a long-standing separation and divorce. I left my radio career, my digital marketing company behind. It definitely was a long wilderness phase, and there's no time limit of how long or how short the wilderness phase is. It's like you're going to be there until you start to figure it out, until you find the lessons you need to find. And I think that that's a necessary part of life for a lot of people and different areas of your life. Some people get, I don't know if it's luck or whatever it is, but some people just know what to do with their life, and they don't ever go through maybe a financial or a career wilderness, but they might go through a personal wilderness, a relationship wilderness. You might lose somebody in your life, and that sends you into a place of wilderness for a while. But we all go through that, and that's where all the growth comes from. I mean, that's the hero's journey, because you have to find, in that hero's journey, you have to find the sage or the guide or whoever that is. And that's where you grow. That place is where you grow. And if looking back on like old societies, right, the initiation into manhood, they put you through some stuff. And I think either we will willingly put ourselves through things, or things will just happen that puts us through things, that tests us, that builds our faith, that builds this resolve inside of us, where we find out. I think what you were saying earlier, man, most people only identify with who they are through what they're doing.
Yeah.
They don't identify who they are through who they're being. And it's really hard to identify who you're being when you're always just doing.
Yep.
But who are you being when you're not doing is one of the biggest questions. It's a really hard question to answer, and an impossible question to answer unless you spend a lot of time with yourself discovering what that is.
Man, it's so well said. I think there's like a default category in life. Like it reminds me of Brewster's Millions. Have you ever seen that movie, Brewster's Millions?
No.
Okay, it's super funny. It's this movie with it's Richard Pryor, and he's this black guy, and he finds out that he has like this super wealthy white uncle, and this uncle died and he left him. And so they pull him in and they sit him down and they go, Mr. Brewer, this is your uncle. And he has a message for you now that he's died. And he's like, hey, how's it going, man? I'm dead. I know I'm a white guy, but I'm your grandfather. And I got a challenge for you. I have $20 million. I'm going to give it to you. If you can spend all $20 million in 6 months, I'll give you $50 million. And he's like, what? And he's been poor his whole life. And he's like, I could totally do that. And he's like, but if you want to wimp out, I'll give you $1 million. And so Brewster decides, you know what? I'm going to spend this $20 million. No problem. I'm going to buy shoes. I'll buy a car. And so he's thinking about all this stuff. And his uncle says, okay, listen, here's the catch though. At the end of 6 months, you can't have any assets. You have to blow it all frivolously. Mr. You love money. And if you had money, you'd just blow it. You'd be so awesome. Here's your challenge. And so he takes on the challenge, and he goes out and he buys all this stuff. And all of a sudden he realizes that coming to grips with having wealth beyond imagine ruins his life. And he finds himself in 6 months realizing, like, I was better off without having all this money. I have all these problems, and I have all these fake friends around me. And now I have all this stuff that, like, I don't even want. It's gross. And like he learns that, like, and it was a really cool movie on a way in which to learn that having things, be it financial or things that you think would make you happy, have a real way of making you unhappy. And I think that that's on life's lesson. It gives us this default. It gives us this clause. Like, listen, you can go through life and be what other people want you to be. Like, that is an option. You can do that. You can just have these labels put on you and you can do that. And it'll be somewhat less fulfilling, but it can be done. But life, and I believe nature, God, life wants you to struggle to become the very best that you can be. But that does mean being alone with yourself. That means spending time seeing your flaws, seeing your beauties, and training yourself to become the best version of yourself. And when you do that, it doesn't matter how much you have. Your relationships will shine. Your eyes will shine. Your curiosity for life will shine. And so in some ways, I think that life is trying to communicate this idea to us. Please try to become the best version of yourself. I will provide you with the test. I'll provide you with the tools. And I will provide you with the resources that you need to do it. But you got to trust. You got to have faith. And I think it's there for everybody, Rob. I really do. If people believe, it's there for them, right?
Of course, it's there for everybody. That's the whole game. When you go out and you buy something you really want, and it does make you feel good for a minute. Like, you feel like really nice. Like, man, I got this. Yeah. What did I buy recently? I bought something recently that was really cool, and I was like really excited about it. Oh, a perfect example is my son. He loves Fortnite, so he's constantly buying new skins. This kid's blowing so much money on a free video game on these skins, and it's never enough. The new skin's never enough because he's got to have another new one like a day later. And he's like, Dad, you need a skin because I'll play too. And he's like, you're this generic, stupid skin. Like, how can you even play as that skin? It's embarrassing to play with you. Wow. And I'm like, fine, then you buy me a skin. So he bought me a skin, and now I have a skin. But I think like, those fleeting things, and those are the funniest to me. This is the NFT virtual world of like skins and stuff like that is the funniest one to me because you can't even ever actually touch it. It's not real. And I keep saying this to him, like, you buy all this stuff and it looks cool in the game, but outside of the game, you can't even have it. You can't even touch it. But in, you know, the things that really matter, if I had to think of like things that really give me a lot of satisfaction, spending time with people that I love to be around. That's one. I always leave those situations feeling so good. I hung out with a friend this morning for an hour. We talked a little bit of business, but we talked a lot about pro wrestling. Cause we both, for whatever reason, like pro wrestling. So that was really great. You know, connecting with people. So podcasts like this, great example. I've been taking jiu-jitsu for a while. Another great example of just something that gives me so much satisfaction every time I do it. When I leave, I'm like, oh, that was everything that I came in there with. I didn't carry out with me. It's just gone. And exercise in general, another great way of doing that. Like, but I think it really comes down to like stuff you do with people. Yeah. And when you do stuff with people you really love or you want to be around, or you're just volunteering your time to help out. When you leave those situations, like, I have a men's group in my church, men's group. Every time I leave men's group, I'm like filled up. I'm filled up to the brim, and I need to carry that with me, right? Because I want to carry that and give it to somebody else. So those are the things that are long lasting that actually stick, and all the material stuff, it doesn't stick. It feels good for a minute. And it's not bad, but it's not everything clearly. And we can clearly see that anybody who's gotten something they really wanted, and then 2 months later, it was not that great anymore, knows that's not it.
Yeah. Man, it's mind blowing. There's so much in there. When I think about, if I take it back to the beginning of the conversation, we talk about skins, or we just talk about observing our children buying digital products in a digital world, I think it uncovers a lot about our own psychology. Like, it's not real. Even though they're buying a non-tangible product, the psychology of it is the same of us buying a new shirt. You know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, I like it. Okay. And it does pacify you on some level, but it is pacifying. It can be unhealthy on some level. Like, it's not really real. It's this idea that you're buying happiness. And that on some level is brilliant marketing. Hey, why don't you have a little sun? Here's a little sunshine for you. Let me just go ahead. $9.99. The first one's free for you. You know what I mean? And like, it kind of explains where we kind of can take that wrong turn sometimes by buying into the idea that purchasing tangible objects can fill the void of relationships. Because it is a relationship in a way, like you're buying this new relationship with it, but you don't have to do anything once you buy it. You know, where a relationship, whether it's jujitsu or a men's group or a podcast, you have to do some work. Like you have to listen and be there and be present and enjoy it and bounce. It's like a dance in some level. And I think that the emptiness that comes from buying things doesn't have that dance involved.
Isn't it interesting? Like we've always said, like, well, we can't take it with us when we die, right? Yeah. So you think like when we die, we can't take any of this stuff with us. So anything you buy digitally, like skins and NFTs, it's like the next level of that, because I can't take this with me when I walk away from my video game console.
Like,
it's just there. And as long as I'm in that world, it's there. But as soon as I walk away and I'm in like real life, it's meaningless and gone. And so it's like another level of that, like we can't take it with us when we die. Like those things, you can't even take it with you while you're still alive. Unless you have your phone, I guess you could play Fortnite in your phone and get the skin on your phone, and then whatever, you get the idea.
Yeah, I do.
Where I'm going with this.
I love it. And I think on some level, I think it brings up this way in which our relationship with AI is fundamentally changing the way we're aware of ourselves and relationship. Because this exact thing that you and I are talking about, you know, it's been along for a long time. When you look back at the 60s and you start looking at some of the hippies, they're like, man, we're getting rid of materialism, man. That doesn't even matter, man. It's just about love. Like that was in the 60s, and still we carried it with us now. And if you look at kids playing video games, they have the opportunity to learn this lesson quickly. Yeah, this is Fortnite. It's a game. I like this skin, but I can't take it with me. And I don't need to. Like they're beginning to learn it at a more rapid evolution. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe they're beginning to learn these lessons as children, which took some of us as adults a long time in our life. Whoa.
What,
crazy
whoa.
Over here.
What was that, dude?
That was just for effect. I wanted to really put an exclamation on there.
Wow, man. That was cool. I liked it. Shocking. Yeah. The shocking podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, or I hear you, but also, or that might just mean that kids are just never going to leave their computers and video game systems. That's where the VR headsets come from.
Yeah.
But there is something there with that, with what you're saying. I don't know. That's interesting to think about. My fear is like, I don't even touch virtual reality because I know that I'm going to get lost in it. And so it's amazing to me right now, as VR is very accessible and cheap, that more people aren't just lost in it all the time. Or maybe they are, and I just don't see them because they never come out of their house because they are always playing VR. But I don't know any of those people. So I'm thinking like, wow, that's just like scary and weird. But also I know it's super cool, which is why I won't do it, because it's probably really, really fun.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a buy-in curve. You know what I mean? Like I remember... I still am fascinated by crypto. I'm still fascinated by the idea of buying virtual property. And you know, imagine owning a virtual library in a popular game, and anybody that went into your library could check out a book or check out your book that you wrote in reality. Like, I think there's some really cool crossovers there, but it's pretty abstract, and it's difficult to measure the value of abstraction. And you know, I don't thoroughly understand it. And how many people are really gonna go to your library in this game? And, you know, when you look at the way in which tech has talked about this incredible future of first virtual reality, and then, okay, maybe not virtual reality. How about augmented reality? Yeah, that's going to be the next thing. Everyone's going to wear these goggles. Going to be awesome. I don't see anybody wearing them. I remember seeing Sergey Brin have a pair of Google goggles in the subway. And the idea that you could look at somebody and instantly check out their profile was pretty fascinating. But then it was like, well, we don't want everybody doing that. You know, it's a violation of privacy. It seems like it lost its way somewhere along the way.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It seems like, because you see like the new videos of like the Google goggles and people are walking down the street, and that seemed to be hot for a second. But that, you're right. Now it's like kind of dissipated. I think it's just going to separate. Some people are going to be so bought in. Some people are going to be so unbelievably bought in that I think we're going to lose track of them. I think this is what occurs to me is like the people who are all in on that stuff, we're never going to see them again. I think they're going to like be in their own world.
Yeah.
I guess the augmented reality world, they'll still be with us. But the VR world, they'll just be there.
Yeah.
And they won't come out. And other people and everybody else is just kind of like getting away from all that stuff and having less of it in their life. I find there's a balance in the middle if you can kind of find that balance. But I don't know. If I had like contacts that I had that like had, I could have video screens in front of me, like I'm good. I don't need it. I'm good and it's okay. I yeah. don't have to have that in my life. But some people, I guess they really feel like they have to. I don't know. I remember years ago, this was probably like 15 years ago. I remember I was sitting at my house mm-hmm. and I was watching a football game, but I was also working on a project on my laptop, but I was also on my phone checking like Twitter about the football game. And I thought like, this is, and I remember sitting thinking like, this is the coolest thing ever. I'm like so connected right now. Mm-hmm. But as I was so connected, I was also super anxious because there was like, I was taking in just too much stuff. And so some people might be able to have the capacity to take in all that stuff at once and they enjoy it. Other people, it's like, it's just overwhelming and unnecessary yeah. and brings anxiety. And I think that's where a lot of our anxiety comes from today. Even doing this podcast right now, George, I'm in front of three screens. I don't need to be on three screens, but there's three screens in front of me. If I need yeah. to concentrate, good freaking luck. Like if I really need to get something done, I usually don't sit on my computer. I'll get on my laptop and I'll go sit on the couch. Because the three screens is too much when I'm diving deep into something, but it's good when I'm like doing this or on a Zoom call where I got to show slides or different, like building something in Canva or whatever. But if I really want to focus, it's got to either be me and a notepad or me and just a laptop or just me and me. Imagine that. Just me. And
yeah.
me.
I love it. I think it speaks to the idea of instinct versus analysis. Like you have an instinct of what you know is good and what you need to get done. Or in a relationship, I think this person likes me or this person doesn't like me. You don't need three screens and a profile view of all their things to realize what they know. Like sometimes an overload of information equals paralysis. You know what yeah. I mean? Like it's just like, yeah. I can't do anything because I can't, you know, you want to read all this stuff. How about you just act? How about you just go with your gut? You know, and it seems like it seems like there's always been this sort of pushback between, you know, biological instinct versus analytical technology, you know, and I don't know which one wins. You know, you can read books that say, well, our instincts are actually pretty bad, you know, we're pretty bad thinkers, you know, or you can say, well, look, man, in the lexicon, there's always been the language of trust your gut. Like that's been around for a long time. You know, you're going to put that up against, we're not very good. Look where we are. Like, look what we've created. So I think that we're just seeing a continual pushback and they just get bigger and bigger waves building up. And maybe they go together hand in hand. You know, if I may, the way in which I've seen augmented reality be implemented into real world commerce that I think speaks to this is, I remember sitting outside my house one day by this park and all of a sudden, all these people showed up almost like a tour bus, but they were in their individual cars and they all had their phones. Like they were looking at aliens or something. And I was like, what is going on here? And they just kept showing up for like hours. And I asked somebody and it was the release of Pokemon Go. And these people were finding Pokemons in natural places using their phone. And I started thinking like, man, you could drive commerce that way. What if like on a hot day, I selected a Pokemon to be found by my Slurpee station? Perfect. You know what I mean? And like, so that seems like there's real world implications for it. And I know that's kind of a lot, but let me get your take on that.
What? Bring
that was a lot. I know. Wait, I just run wild sometimes.
What's the take though? I'm sure people were doing that, right? I mean, that was probably yeah. a thing positioning. Are you asking, is it a good thing?
Yeah.
Or is it like,
yeah. I am asking, what is your take on the biological versus the analytical and implementing that into the real world together?
I mean, Pokemon Go got people to go outside who wouldn't go outside very often. So I thought yes. that was good. That seemed to be a positive.
Yeah.
But also they were getting hit by cars and stuff. So I don't
they were? I didn't hear about this. Were they really?
Well, yeah, because they were like chasing the Pokemon and you got to catch them all. Yeah, like it was out of control. Actually, I don't. I know that did happen. I never played Pokemon Go, so I don't know exactly how it was laid out. But It just seems novel, but not necessary. Mm. I don't know, man. It just seems so... When I had to really think about it, like, it's cool. It's like, oh, that's cool. Like, playing... Yeah. Like, I didn't play video games for decades. A couple, maybe like 15 years. Because I knew I had an addiction to them. Mm-hmm. And then I got my son, and he was playing Fortnite. And I'm like, oh, I can download it on my computer and play it. And I start getting sucked into it. And I'm like, oh, no. Like, I'm still just as addicted as I was when I was 19 years old. I got to stop. And so I don't know. It just doesn't seem necessary, but there's no stopping it also.
Yeah.
There's no, it's not going to stop, but I don't have to like be fully involved in it. So I think that there's like you kind of have to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. I look at kind of, I want to stay in tune enough to understand what is happening, but I don't want to be so into it that I get lost in it. But social media or augmented reality, I imagine, is super addicting, and it's easy to get lost in it because it's easy to get lost in your phone. Every second you think like, oh, I don't know this, or I wonder what the weather's like today. Oh, we're going to go mini golfing later. I wonder if it's going to rain. And then I'm on my phone looking at the weather, and then I'm on YouTube for no reason. And, you know, it's just like this rabbit trail of addiction that you go down and you don't even realize that it's happening. So I don't know what your question was or what my answer is, but I think the answer is it seems to be a perpetual balancing act, but none of it seems necessary. It's convenient, but it doesn't seem necessary. But it's here and there's no avoiding it, but I also feel like I don't need it. So something that I will do, I started this last summer and I'm going to do that this summer again. I have a friend who is a landscaping and hardscaping company, so 2 days a week I go and work, you know, anywhere from like 10 to 16 hours doing landscaping and hardscaping for some cash.
Yeah.
And I get outside. I can actually, instead of the sun being blocked here, I'm in the sun. I'm digging in the dirt. Yeah. I'm building something. I actually learned how to do stuff for my own backyard by being on this job. And it gave me, like, I was like definitely uplifted by it. And I'm like, wow, maybe I should do this all the time. But then I'm like, I also love what I do and I love coaching. I don't love all of the online stuff, but I love a lot of it. This right here, podcasting.
Yeah.
Freaking love it.
Me too.
And the fact that I can connect with anybody and anywhere in the world is amazing and just a beautiful thing. But going outside and digging in dirt and getting dirty and building stuff, that's really kind of hard to beat. It's very hard to replicate that. Just like jiu-jitsu, very hard. Mm-hmm. To replicate the joy you get from having a 250-pound guy lay on you and you can hardly breathe, but then you figure out some way to like squirm your way out, or you choke somebody out, or you know, you just learn something new. Like, it's really hard to those things, the real life tangible things, are really hard to duplicate anywhere else. I would say impossible, really. You can't duplicate human interaction in the virtual world. It's just not going to work.
Yeah. There's something about physical violence between two people that's sanctioned versus Mortal Kombat in a video game. Like, it's just not as wholesome's not the right word. It's not as like cathartic. There's like no release. You know, when two people, when you're fighting or wrestling or doing something with somebody, like, there's this sort of brutal contact that's necessary. And the idea of using your aggression in a physical way to assault somebody else in a constructive way is something that's kind of beautiful. And when you do it in that way, whether you're in a sanctioned wrestling room or a sanctioned jiu-jitsu room, like, you really get to feel what superiority, authority, fight, struggle, life, breathing, you really get these real ideas of it versus this obscure view in a video game where you could just send some sort of harpoon through somebody, you know?
Yeah, it's satisfying for a little while.
Yeah, satisfying.
It's really empty at the end. I think maybe that's the message in all this, man, is that everything online is, in the end, without the physical real life counterpart, really sad and empty. And the thing that drives all innovation on the internet is porn, which is a very sad, depressing, and empty fake side of actually having real intimacy.
Yep.
with somebody that you love, right? Porn is incredibly satisfying and addicting, but in the end, brutally sad and horribly depressing.
Yeah.
And that to me is kind of like, that's like the underline on like nothing virtually is ever going to satisfy you. Zoom. Like I love talking to people over Zoom and it's really cool to connect with them. But if I didn't actually ever meet people in real life and I sat in this chair and just talked to people on Zoom all day long and I never interacted with real people, I would be so miserable. So miserable. Even though I have great relationships online, yeah. You still need to be around somebody. You know, yeah. you can't duplicate it. You can't recreate it. It's impossible. So anybody who's trying to recreate it and thinking we're going to live in these virtual worlds, we're not going to be happy. There's just no way.
Yeah. In some ways it makes me think about, you know, one of the cruelest punishments we do as humans is isolation. You know, when you put people in solitary confinement, they lose their mind, you know, because they don't have connection. And in a weird way, it seems that social media is sort of solitary confinement with windows, you know, with shadows on the cave, maybe, you know, if you take it all the way back to the idea of ancient philosophy. But
yeah, it's, by the way, my wife made me a smoothie and I felt like I had to drink it. So that's what I've been drinking. I didn't want to be rude that I was drinking on the podcast, but she dropped it off while I was on the podcast and it looked so good that I couldn't stop myself.
What an amazing woman, man. You're a lucky guy.
Thanks. It was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, those are worth embracing in life. And let me ask you this. So when you talk about social media relationships, being on a podcast or a Zoom call, and then you're talking about going outside and working with nature, do you think that those two things are similar, in that in one way you're having communications within an individual and in the other way you're having communications with nature?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, you're learning a lot about yourself in communications with people. Nature doesn't really, it's like hanging out with a dog. You know, it doesn't really talk back. So it's not as like, that's a good question, man. I think if you have a lot of like anxiety around people, nature's probably more healing for you, until you can learn to balance that anxiety and find joy in interacting with people. But I think somebody who's not comfortable with interacting with people, they do much better just learning how to. It's funny thing when you're doing landscaping or hardscaping, most of the people that I work with, they don't really, there's not a whole lot of talking going on. Mm-hmm. Like they're very, seem to be kind of like introverted. They just do the work. And there's something very relaxing in that we just like get the thing done and you're super focused on the thing that you're doing. And yeah, I learn a lot doing that. And I also, I find.
How do you learn? Like if there's not a whole lot of talk going on and you're working, like
if I'm doing it wrong, like, am I screwing this up? Or like, well, show me what to do. Right. You know, they'll show me.
Right.
But we learn. Well, I think I'm just learning about like myself. I'm just learning like, oh, it's nice to be outside for 8 hours. Oh, this is different. I don't like, because I had jobs when I was younger.
Yeah.
I worked at a Kentucky Fried Chicken. I worked at a Hooters.
Yeah.
I worked at all these dumb jobs. But I never like worked outside of the job. And I'd always think like, oh, it's hot out. I don't want to be outside all day. I'm hot. And then when I'm working 8 hours outside and it's hot, I'm like, I don't even care anymore. If it's hot. I'm just like used to it. And so maybe that's one thing that I did learn was like, I should have been doing this a long time ago. I should have been working outside when I was like 15 or 16. And I think whenever my son gets old enough, because he's 9 right now, turning 10, and it's time for him to get a job, or if he starts really complaining about money, and be like, hey, bro, I'll get you a lawnmower. You can go start cutting grass for people. They'll pay you money. And then, like, I'll find a landscaper and be like, hey, you guys need, like, some summer help, and get my son a job and then force him to go. I want to be that dad who, like, opens the bedroom door on, like, a summer morning and is like, hey, I got you a job. You got to meet Clark down at the Sunoco. And you're going to start working tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. And he's like, oh, why, Dad? Why are you doing this to me? I'm like, it's good for you. You get cash in your hand, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think you could be successful at that. And but I do, you know what? I would back it up a little bit. I would say that that's nature's language. The way in which you learn to landscape or hardscape by experience and then translating that experience into your own backyard, I look at that almost as a language, or being outside and realizing you're comfortable with the heat. I look at that as a dialogue with nature teaching you what you're capable of. And I think if more people did that, you know, you would really begin to understand how that dialogue, that lived experience outside doing things, translates into interpersonal relationships. Because the same way you can look at the soil and be like, oh, the soil is a little bit wet today, or oh, it needs a little bit of this. So too can you look at someone's facial expressions and this person needs a little exercise and empathy today, or this person needs a little cheering up today. But I think that I think you can see both, you know, and see yourself as a mediator, not only working with nature, but working with people. And there's a crossover there.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that. I feel like also when you work in nature, it kind of gets you in tune with how things should be.
Yes.
We're so nerf proofed.
Yeah.
Out here. Like I'm in my basement office all day long. It's just like we need air conditioning. And then you go out of your house from the air conditioning into the hot sun. And you're like, oh, it's so hot out. It's like, what? It's just outside. This is like what the world is. You're just in here living this pretend world. Like,
yes.
So when you're out there in that, you kind of get a sense of how things really are. And then when I see like some guys, like it's raining or cold out and they're like laying concrete, and I'm like, oh man, those guys, that's gotta suck. But then when you're out there, you just kind of like get used to it. And I think that's tying this to what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think that's like when you're really, you know, when you don't spend a lot of time with different kinds of people and you don't know how to be comfortable around certain kinds of people and you're anxious, that's really difficult for you. But if you're exposed healthily to a lot of different kinds of people and situations, then it's not as anxiety ridden going into those situations. But like you have to expose yourself to different kinds of people, different kinds of environments, or if you don't do the exposure, then you're going to be so uncomfortable when you finally are exposed to it that you're just going to run back inside and get away from it. And we need that exposure for environments and for personalities. So maybe I'm connecting this, what you're saying, man. Like there's different, I mean, luckily, if I want environments, Pennsylvania is the best place, because sometimes we have all four seasons in a day. Sometimes it'll be, and this is no joke, it could be snowing in the morning and really cold. And then by afternoon, it could be raining because it got a little bit warmer, so it's not snowing anymore. And then by the afternoon, this is like a March day. By the afternoon, it's warmed up and it could be like 60 degrees and then cool off in the evening and go back down to like freezing again. So it's like all these elements, like all at once, like happening in a single day, and like getting used to that. I think there's definitely a lot of benefit to that. No doubt. Just like getting around different kinds of people. And isn't it interesting? Like, I used to do a lot of drugs and I was around drug dealers, and they always made me super uncomfortable. I hated being around drug dealers. I was never that guy. I just wanted to get the drugs and then get away from them as fast as I could. And now, and they always want to hang out, right? They're always like, oh man, stay a while, man. I'm like, I don't want to stay a while. I need to get out of here.
Yeah.
And, but now as I've changed my circle, I get nervous now around like successful, confident people who were like really successful. That makes me nervous. Like, but it's a good nervous. So the drug dealer's a bad nervous. The successful people's a good nervous. Like, I don't even know, because you don't feel worthy. I don't feel worthy of being around this person. I don't feel like I have anything to say to them or talk to them about. And that makes me, it gives me anxiety where I want to run away. I want to like get away from them because it's making me feel weird, but I know I'm going to learn something if I stay, and I need to stay around them. I need to be around them more because there's something I can glean here. And if I can be around them long enough, I'm going to learn some stuff and I'm going to pick up on some things of how they speak, how they act, how they talk, that is going to be really helpful for me. And I think if we look at our society and look at music and culture, we make what looks cool a lot of bad activity, right? I mean, drug dealing has been like glamorized and like celebrated in our society, but being a successful person is looked at as like, that's the evil person, right? The rich person, which some people who have a lot of money, I'm sure, are not great people. But a lot of the times, like, these people worked hard to get to where they're at. There's a lot to learn there. We should look at that as an interesting thing. But then, okay, on the other end of that, I really want to get around people. The people I love to be around the most are people that are closest with God. So people in my life that have a very close relationship with God and with Jesus, those people, when I'm around them, I'm like, holy cow, this is like the best place in the world to be, because they are just... when you find the real ones, they are just who they are, and they're that way all the time. And they're always willing to listen. They always want to help out, and they're always just ready to help in some sort of way, or pass wisdom along in some sort of way. And it just feels, you just have a really good feeling when you're with them. And that's something that you can't really manufacture that feeling. That's impossible. Hey, thanks, Thomas. Thomas says,
yeah,
brilliant. Thanks, dude.
You know, speaking of brilliant, Thomas Hutchison's brilliant. You should, anybody who's reading, you should go on Facebook and look at some of the stuff that he writes about. Totally brilliant guy, and cool. Has an incredible way of seeing the world, and trying to get him to come on the podcast. So, Thomas, open invitation, buddy. Let's make this thing happen.
Well, hey, Tom, you're watching, man. Like,
yeah,
let's go.
Yeah. So, do you think that this idea of anxiety, whether it's taking you away from the old drug dealers, or pulling you towards successful people, or pulling you towards the people that you admire in your church, is like magnetism in some way? Is it a feeling that's driving you towards becoming what you want to be? It sounds like it's a force bigger than you, that's outside of us and inside of us. It's pulling us towards where we want to be.
That magnetism and repellent is cool. It's real, isn't it? Like, when you're around, hey, there you go. Tom's up for a podcast, 100%.
On both of ours. Here we go.
There you go. So, that repellent is really strong. Like, when I was around drug dealers, it was like I couldn't get near them. Like, I had to get, like, that, you could feel like that tension. Like, I had to get out of there.
Yeah.
But then the magnetic of it with other people is very real. Yeah, the magnetic part of that is like, I can't get close enough to this person. Like, I want to be closer to them. I need to be like right next to them. I need to learn, and I want to be here, and I want to like soak all of this in. But then other people, like, you know, it's like you have to warm up to being comfortable enough to being around them. If you're like intimidated by them. But that whole concept is very true. The magnetism and repellent, in life, no doubt.
Yeah,
man.
I feel it in my, you know, being in some uncomfortable situations too earlier in life, or still every now and then. Like, you almost feel like if you take two magnets and you take the opposite poles, like there's a real thing in between them. Like, you can feel it being repulsed. And I think that we have that inside us when we're on the wrong path. Like, there is some force we bump up against that is like, this is the wrong thing to be in, and you can feel it. And the same way when you're on the right path and the endorphins are flowing and you're doing this thing that's right, and you're getting goosebumps, like, that is the right path. Like, there's something bigger than us that knows the direction in which we should be headed, and it lets us know, man. And that gets me back to this idea of communicating with nature. Maybe that's divine intervention. It's God, maybe it's nature, but whatever it is, man, the awareness that there's something bigger than us communicating to us on a daily basis, like, man, it brings me incredible juice, man. And it makes me thankful and fills me with gratitude and fear and all of these things. But I want more people to be aware of this thing we call life, constantly communicating with us. Because I think the more you become aware of it, the more you can begin to interact with it. And the more you can interact with it, the more you can understand the path that you should be on. And it's something everybody, man, can be in. It can happen, right? Because you feel it, it's there.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I fell into this really good business opportunity that was great. I was like, this is incredible. Like I got set up with this guy and this team, and it was like a really good path to making a really good living. And it was just a really cool opportunity.
Yeah.
But I felt terrible about it the entire time. I felt like something was wrong from the onset of the first meeting. But I went along with it anyways, because I was like, well, I mean, this is a great opportunity. And it kind of fits. I was doing digital marketing at the time. And like, this fits my digital marketing background. This is a sweet spot. Like, there's a lot of potential here. But something felt so wrong about it, about the guy who ran it. And I could not get past it. And I stuck it out for over a year, while the whole time not feeling good about it, not just having this pit in my stomach. When I would talk to this guy, every single time I talked to him, I was repulsed. Like I felt like this repulsion, like where I did not feel comfortable speaking to him. I did not feel comfortable like hanging with him, or I don't know. It was intangible. I could not tell you what it was. And I found out some stuff later on that confirmed the way that I was feeling. But I ended up getting out of it. Before I knew the stuff, I ended up getting out of it. And I was like, I don't care if this is like successful. I don't care that I can't even articulate what's wrong here. I know something's wrong and I'm not supposed to be here. And so I left it.
Good.
And it's cool too. When you leave something like that, there's no regrets. Like I didn't have any regrets. Like, yeah, there was money left on the table. I didn't care because I knew I had to get the heck out of there.
Yep.
And so it didn't matter to me. It did not matter what the situation was. I had to get out. And that was a great lesson for me of like just listening to what was almost like, I didn't even have a choice to listen. It was like, I wasn't choosing to listen. It was like, I could not ignore it, you know? So I had to get away from it. But that was one of the examples in my later life, like recently, that's happened. But that happened a lot whenever I was younger, and I ignored those signs all the time. I was always hanging around people I shouldn't have been hanging around, doing things I shouldn't have been doing, and I knew I shouldn't be doing this, but I had like low self-esteem, and you know, I just wanted people to like me, and I thought that what I was doing was cool. And so I went down some paths that I shouldn't have gone down. But I think that's one of the things in life, you know, you make your mess your message. You learn from the things that you, because everybody always says, I wish I could go back and do it over again. I don't wish that, because that's not the point.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think reincarnation's real. I think it's a bunch of BS. I think reincarnation's real in the sense that we have DNA. And so when you have a child, that's an extension of your DNA. So in a way, that's your DNA reincarnating, like another version of the DNA strand, an evolved version of it, right? And so I look at that as kind of, that to me makes sense. And like, that's a, if there is a reincarnation, that's what it is. It's like, because of course that is reincarnation. When you have somebody, when you have a child and they look like you, they act like you, they have your mannerisms, things like that. It's like, how is that not something in your DNA strand reincarnating again and again? When you have personality traits, or you have even when you have like genetic things that are passed down generation to generation, how is that not reincarnation? It just seems like that's what that is to me. That's just my own personal thought on it, and I don't even know why I'm talking about that right now. I totally lost my train of thought.
No, it's perfect, man. I agree. I think that even speaks to generational trauma. We look at the way in which our lineage unfolds, like when we look at that, it seems to me like I could see how that's karma. Like you could do something in your life. And I sometimes think about this when I go way down the rabbit hole of some of the most powerful and the most seemingly corrupt people in my life. I'm like, how can they live this life where they have so much power? And it, you know, and sometimes I just play with that rabbit hole, but then I look at their kids and I'm like, oh, their kids are going to live in their shadows and have to pay the price for this person's greed forever. And you think to yourself, like, wow, can you imagine making decisions in your life knowing your child is gonna have to pay for that? Like, I think that's what happens when you start looking at the way in which a lot of people at the very top, you know, they seem to give themselves to this other thing rather than something a little bit more virtuous. Like, you can't serve two masters on some levels. And if you, it seems to me like if you really want to compete at the highest level of anything, you can't really have a family. If you want to be the very best at something, you have to compete at a level that demands your attention constantly. And that means you can't be around. You can't be the father. You can't be the husband, because you have to be constantly competing to be the best at your craft. And you see that leak into the championships and stuff like that. And kids pay for that. Like, there's a generational cost, or, you know, a reincarnation cost at being not your best self for the people that love you on some level. I don't know if that thoroughly makes sense, but I think it's there, man. It's in our genes. It's in generational trauma. And what we do in this life has a radical effect on those that have our genes later in life, maybe multiple generations.
Well, George, listen, man, generational curses are real. The spiritual realm, the spiritual realm is real. There are powers and principalities that rule that we can't see.
Yeah.
These powers and principalities are real. They are here. We can't see them, but you can see them in the way things manifest in people.
Yep.
But those things can be broken off. Those things, by your own choices, your own decisions, your own prayers, break these things off of me, break these things off of my family. It takes the prayer, the decision, but also the actions and the choices you make.
Yeah.
Because you want to break those things off in your lineage. Like, I want to be like a lineage breaker, right? I want to start a new lineage for my family and the things that got passed down that are curses, right? Because you think about, and I think honestly, I mean, obviously addictions, alcoholism, poverty mindset, that's a curse. But a lot of like hereditary diseases and illnesses, those are curses. Some of them are genetic. Some of them are curses that are put on people. And this has been, you know, this is in the Bible and in many other things also. Like, these things are not folklore. They are for real. They're for real. And we have to treat them like they're real. We can't just treat them like they are. We can't treat them flippantly. You hear this so many times, like genetic, heart disease is in the family line. Like, why is that there? It wasn't always there. Something, it got there, but it doesn't have to be there. You can be the one who changes it.
Yeah.
And I believe that. And I don't have heart disease in my family, thank God. There's colon issues in my family. My dad had colon issues. He had colon cancer. I've been tested. I'm good right now. My sister's had issues. So there's something there like that. I'm going to pray against. I'm going to eat against, right? So I'm going to eat the right things.
Yeah.
I'm not going to consume things that are going to add to it. But I'm going to break that. And also the awareness of it, just to like talk about it and treat it in a different way of like, this isn't just how it is. This isn't just how it has to be. This might've been how it was, but I'm making the decision. It stops with me. One of those things too is like just anger, right? Like rage and anger. That's one that I noticed for myself is like, I don't like that part of me. That's not me. And I don't claim it. When I get real angry like that, that's not me. I'm not going to claim it. I'm going to rebuke it. And it doesn't mean it's not going to come back. And it doesn't mean it's not going to creep its head up again.
Yep.
But I'm going to stand at the gate of my mind and cut that stuff off. It needs to be cut off.
Yeah. I love it, man. And I think that standing up for yourself and having the courage to sit with uncomfortable thoughts is a great way to begin to manifest positive things in not only your life, but in the life of your family. And it's hard, man. It's hard to sit down with these ideas that belong to your father and your mother and this humiliation that may be in your genes, or this desire to self-destruct, or this desire to self-sabotage yourself. Man, we all have these things in us, but it's hard to sit with them. But if you don't sit with them and you don't battle them in your own mind, like, that's not true, or it's not true anymore. That's the old me. If you don't do that, then you will manifest those things in your relationships, man. And everyone can do it. And it starts, for some people, it might be just getting up and going for a walk in the morning. For some people, it might be looking in the mirror and being like, hey, man, you look pretty good today. You've working out, you know, whatever it is, man, but take that one step every day to talk to yourself and sit with the uncomfortable thoughts and hold them and let them go, man. I think that, and I love the idea of breaking the curse or breaking the cycle, man. That's beautiful.
It needs to be done. We need to do it. And it needs to be looked at as like a necessity, not like, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
No, it needs to go. That kind of stuff needs to go. If something can change because of you making the decision to change it, then let's freaking change it. Yeah. Going back, you know, we talked about this before we started this podcast, but I read that one thing to you about integrity. That people that we have great respect for are powerful people. What makes someone powerful is the trait of keeping your word. Yeah. When you feel powerful, you perform well and you feel good. What do we need to get into the game of keeping your word? Start by giving your word. So I'm going to give my word that I'll do this. Then I'm going to keep my word that I'm going to do this. And it's such a rare thing because it's amazing that something so simple and important is so rare. And that's why, integrity is a word we don't say enough or hear enough anymore. It's my highest value in integrity. Am I integrous all the time? No, but man, I want to be, and I try to be on a regular basis because integrity is everything. If I don't have integrity, I'm going to hate myself. I'm not going to like being with me. And if I don't like being with me, then
who else will?
Nobody else is going to like being with me. Yeah. Yeah.
That's so true, man. It's like a lighthouse.
Yeah. Rob,
this is fantastic. You know, this is our second podcast together. I really love the conversation, man. I feel like we're cut from the same cloth in so many ways, but still have so many different, you know, areas to uncover together, man. I hope you can come back at some point in time. We continue this conversation. But before I let you go, man, where can people find you? What do you got coming up and what are you excited about?
So you can find me. My website is leadimpacttransform.com. You can find out about me there, my coaching business. If you want to talk, just go to LinkedIn, Rob Z. Wentz. You can find me there. And as far as going on, with your True Life podcast is your thing. The Unstuck Movement is my thing, man. And just those stories of helping people get unstuck from difficult places in their life. If you want to break the chains that are holding you back, you need examples from people who have done it. So that's my big mission, is getting that out to the world and telling more of those stories and showing that there is a pattern and a formula for you to have breakthrough in any area of your life. So check out the Unstuck Movement podcast.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it. I love the format. I love the way in which you, no nonsense, just coming with it, man, right out of the gate, helping people. And I think that you have left a really cool catalog for people to go and begin their journey and find someone to do it with. So we'll hang on briefly afterwards. Everybody else, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. Truly enjoy the conversation. Thomas, you are the man. Thanks for hanging out with us today. Everybody else in the chat, truly appreciate it. Hope everybody has a beautiful day. That's all we got. Aloha.
See ya.
Aloha, everyone. Thanks for taking a moment to hang out with me in the True Life Podcast. I truly appreciate it. If you're taking some time to listen to this, whether it's your first podcast with me or you've been with me the whole way, I truly want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. Additionally, I would like to try to inspire everyone. The world is a crazy place. And if you listen to your heart and you take some chances, I really think the world will unfold in front of you in ways you can't imagine. I've been doing the podcast for about 5 years. Last year, I decided to take the plunge. Well, circumstances dictated that I took the plunge, and I did. I've begun working on the podcast full-time for almost a year now, and it's been so rewarding to me that I just want to try and inspire other people. If you have a dream, if you have a vision, follow the voice in your heart, listen to the song on the wind, and embrace the challenge. I think you're strong enough, you're smart enough, and you're good enough to make your dreams come true, but you have to believe in them. And I truly believe wholeheartedly that if you take a chance, a real chance on what is possible, then your dreams will unfold in front of you. Uncertainty can be a monster. It can be something that we run away from. But much like fear, if you stand in front of it, it's not that big of a problem.
I know everyone listening to this has a dream and a vision, and I hope you all conquer it. And I want you to know it's possible. Take baby steps and move towards it, and you will get closer to it. Your relationships will be better. Your life will be better. And you know what? You deserve it. You're an amazing person. If you get a moment, go down to the show notes. If you can, support the show. Thank you so much for being here. Now let's get to it.